Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. This week, the Premier League served up a feast of football drama that we can't wait to sink our teeth into. We'll delve into the fiery North London derby where tensions ran high, set pieces reigned supreme, and testicles busted. Then we bit a...
whoa. What happened at the derby?
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. If you haven't seen it, that was a great shot. I didn't even see that part beforehand, but fantastic. Hat off to you. But we will eventually get into that North
Don't put it on the teleprompter. Burgundy will read anything.
I feel like you shouldn't use the verb busted there.
Busted. I mean, it was. It said but a burst.
And nuts
but
were
I mean,
busted like... all over the derby, baby.
Okay. All right. All right.
All right. We're getting into this. But before we get into it, I did want to, you know, wish everyone here a belated St. Totteringham's Day. And if you are not familiar with it, it is the year or the day of the year that everyone looks forward to, where it is mathematically impossible for Tottenham Hotspurs to finish above Arsenal in the English Premier League season. And that happened at a North London derby. So happy St. Totteringham's Day, everybody, or belated St. Totteringham's Day, everyone. So Sean and Kyle, how do you plan on spending and celebrating St. Totteringham's Day?
I wish we could just screencast James's face. I've never seen such a just smug grin on this kid's face in his life, being able to read that off.
Sure. Well, every year, and I don't want to call out Tom Spashino's name out in public on a podcast, but now he owes me every year we make a bet, because he's a Spurs fan, silly, silly boy, that whoever finishes higher in the table, the loser has to pay. So I'll come and collect. So watch your kneecaps,
James,
for a little bit there, Sabby boy.
Is this a drinking holiday?
It's the best type of holiday. I get a gift of a non-tangible item, which is pure joy, and then I can drink my joy till the next morning. So celebrate however you wish, Kyle, however you wish.
That sounds good to me.
But there is in the hot news that we have a couple reasons to celebrate. Sean, there's a new manager for you. Xavi is back in Barcelona. But more importantly, the biggest celebration right now, we'll get into the other ones very shortly, but the biggest celebration is of the Leicester City fans. They are now locked into promotion back into the Premier League after just one season back into the Championship. This typically happens with a lot of the recently relegated teams. You like to call it a yo-yo. So they yo-yo back in the Premier League after their Leeds United lost to QPR on Friday. It becomes mathematically impossible for them not to be promoted. So congratulations to Leicester City, and specifically one Jamie Vardy. He had a brace against Preston North End yesterday, which clinched the title for the Foxes. He is 37 years of age and is also the team's top goal scorer with 18. And only four of those are from penalty kicks, maybe remind you. So he is 37, still firing on all cylinders. He's tied for fifth place for the Golden Boot race in the championship and will be an unrestricted free agent next year. So will we see him return to the EPL? What do we think there? And Kyle, I know you love the shithousery, so I know you're probably looking forward to it.
Hell yeah. I hope he comes back, man. I mean, Jamie Vardy is 37 years old. And if you guys watched his goal this week, he blasted that ball into an open net with such unnecessary force. It was just a big F you to the other team. And it's the type of goal you'd expect like a 20-year-old player to do new to a team, or Mario Balotelli to do any time in his career. But it was a fucking rocket ship that almost missed. So I love it. I love the shithousery. Welcome back to the Premier League, 37-year-old legend, Jamie Vardy. Hopefully, and this is me just talking to Jamie Vardy as a player. I hope he gets a different contract, a different team, different everything, because this man is loyal to a T. He's always been Leicester, and he's always been underpaid, taking pay cuts so the team can be better than what it could be. And you know what? He's worth more than $1 million a year, which is what his contract was. That's unbelievable for a goal scorer and a player of Jamie Vardy's caliber and quality. Love him as a guy. Love him as a player. I hope him all the best. I hope he gets finally paid at the age of 38.
Yeah, I mean, he's been with Leicester City since 2012. Last season, he didn't have a great one in the Premier League. He played in 42 matches, but only managed to put six in the back of the net. So what a revitalization for the Leicester City striker. And like you said, very loyal. He did not want to be relocated from the Leicester City town when they went under, or when they went back down to the Championship. So a lot of loyalty goes a long way.
Think about think about when they got you know, won the league in 2015. That team, all the best players, you have Conte, you have Maguire, you have Mahrez, all the best players left for bigger money. Jamie Vardy, the top goal scorer that season for the team, best player on the team, said, nah, screw that. I'm staying where I belong. We just won the league. He didn't take a pay raise. He just stayed. You got to respect that out of a guy.
I read this since it's St. Tottenham's Day. He won the championship, got promoted, won the Premier League, got relegated, and won the championship again, all in the same span that Harry Kane was not able to get a single trophy. So, unreal. So the grave just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But with the championship still on the mind, the other automatic promotion spot is still up for grabs between Leeds, currently at 90 points, and Ipswich Town with 93 points. Both teams have one regular season game remaining. The team that does not get the second automatic promotion spot will go into the playoffs, which will be between either Ipswich and Leeds, Southampton, Norwich, and West Brom. Now, all of those teams might sound very familiar to you, except for Ipswich. That's because we've seen them all relatively recently in the English Premier League. So everyone I'm thinking about is probably keeping their fingers in to up Ipswich. So hopefully that we will see them in the Premier League for the first time.
And don't forget, everyone, the Champions League is a 46-game season. So scoring 93 points, I think Leicester is about to hit 100 if they win their next game. It's not as impressive as doing it in the Premier League. But still, 93 points, 100 points. It's a lot of games. Impressive.
It's a lot of games. You don't have the European tournaments like you do in the Premier League, but you still have a lot of domestic tournaments. You're in the FA Cup. You're in the Carabao Cup. You're still playing a lot of games if you're on that squad. So it's a lot of rotation. But talking about squad, possible future rotation, Liverpool finally hire a new coach from Fred Nord, and the manager is one Arne Slot. So Sean, besides correcting me on how I pronounce Frey Nord, how is this new manager going to fit in? What's his going to be new role and responsibility? We get to see another bald manager in the English Premier League, so that's always exciting. What's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Another bald and Dutch manager, but he's not fraudulent, and he can speak fluent English, so that's a positive, especially from my perspective. His name is Arne Slot, and he manages at Feyenoord currently. It's basically the third biggest club in the Netherlands. According to a report from David Ornstein on Friday, Liverpool agreed with terms with Feyenoord for an 11 million euro fee for the 45-year-old Dutchman to take over as Jurgen Klopp's successor. What has he done? He's been at Feyenoord for three seasons in that time. The first season, he led them to a Europa Conference League final where they lost to Roma. Following that, he won the Eredivisie, just Feyenoord's second title this century. And then this year, and he also took them to a Europa League quarterfinal, lost to Roma once again. But this was their best finish in Europe in over 20 years. And then this year, they are second place in the Dutch league. PSV's had an incredible season with just three draws and one loss. But he did win the Dutch League Cup. Also, they finished third in their Champions League group behind Atletico Madrid and Lazio, and once again was knocked out by Roma. So I guess the one marker for success for him is if we can avoid Roma, he should be okay. He seems to be really successful outside of that. But I like the appointment. The more that I read about it, it seems like – tell me if this sounds familiar – he plays high-intensity, pressing football, looking to force turnovers and counterattack quickly. He's known for his willingness to give opportunities to youth players in the academy, and he's praised for his new school style of management, being able to relate to players one-on-one. He's not a disciplinarian. He's not a screamer or a shouter. There's certainly some aspects of Jurgen Klopp there, I think, and I think that's a big reason why he got the job. Some of the differences, he's known for a 4-2-3-1 formation, so there will be a little bit of a tactical switch from how Liverpool play it. They'll obviously still four at the back, but they'll have two, like a double pivot in midfield with two deeper line midfielders. Basically, the main change is that number 10 role, that attacking midfield. I think they have some players who can play there, specifically Harvey Elliott and Dominic Szoboszlai, but it will be kind of interesting to see if potentially that's an area that they look to add in the summer, or whether or not he trusts the guys that they do, you know, have in place. Where he differs from Jurgen Klopp is the fact that he's a big admirer of Pep Guardiola and Roberto De Zerbi. He values possession, particularly in deep buildup. you know, in his own half of the field. So I would expect, you know, the biggest change obviously is formation. The second biggest change would be the style of play. They're going to be a little bit more patient in possession would be my expectation in comparison to how, you know, Liverpool plays now, where there's a lot of long balls over the top. And not to say that there won't be those, but I just think less frequently, certainly comparatively to how they play now. But he's coached really, you know, top talent. Some of his former players include Tyrell Malacia, who was sold to Manchester United, Marco Senesi, who's at Bournemouth now. He actually scored this weekend. We'll get into that. Luis Sinisterra, another Bournemouth man, was formerly at Leeds. And Reece Nelson, my cousin Brian's favorite player of all time and a current Arsenal boy who was there on loan a couple years ago. So all four of those guys were there his first season when they went to the Conference League final, all left, and they were crucial for him, all left, and then he went on and won the league. So he's able to overcome, you know, major changes to his squad and still able to be successful. And I think the biggest reason why it's a fit is because his experience winning trophies despite not being able to compete financially at the very top. And obviously, you know, when we're talking about the Eredivisie, they don't spend even the same amount as the teams at the very bottom of the Premier League. There's just not as much money in the division. But for comparison's sake, right, his highest signing was a £8.3 million center back named Henko that they bought from the, I think he's Slovenian, they bought him from the Czech League. Whereas just this season, PSV and Ajax, who are the two traditional other powers in the Netherlands, had signings over 10 million. So, you know, from a Liverpool standpoint, they can't compete financially with teams like Man City, Manchester United, Chelsea. Even Arsenal spends more than Liverpool has in the last, you know, since Arteta's took over. If you look almost every year, Arsenal spends more money. So that aspect of, that he can still find ways to win trophies is great. I think that fits really well. And I think a really big thing also is that, you know, from a mentality standpoint, the confidence that he instills in his players is great. Feyenoord had not beaten Ajax at the Johan Cruyff Arena since 2005 when he took over. They've already done it three times in the 3 years that he's been there. They did it for the first time last year in the league and then also in the cup, and then did it again just a few weeks ago with a 4-0 drubbing. So that's a big thing. And then just also, it's not like he's come out of nowhere. Just, you know, looking at last year, he was the top choice for both Leeds and Crystal Palace when they fired Jesse Marsh and Patrick Vieira, respectively, and turned it down. And then also was offered the Tottenham job last summer, but ultimately turned it down to spend another year at Feyenoord. And obviously they pivoted and hired Ange Postecoglou, which, you know, has worked out really well for Spurs. But I think obviously it's going to be an adjustment. I would expect that Liverpool has a similar season to what Tottenham had this year. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll be in a title race again next year. I think, you know, despite a lot of what some of the less intelligent people will say, Klopp is one of the two best managers in the world, mm-hmm. And has been for about a decade plus. So there will be a drop off. But I think, you know, given the fact his age and the profile, it certainly fits with the culture of Liverpool. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the signings right and, you know, how easily the current players can acclimate to the system and the style of play that he wants.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. We'll see.
I think it's a great, anytime you go through such an era, right? Like the Klopp era was probably the best Liverpool era to date. You know, you change.
Yeah. At least in the Premier League.
Yeah.
In the Premier League. Definitely.
Yeah. You change three results in Klopp's history, and you turn one Premier League and one Champions League into three Premier Leagues and two Champions League trophies. I mean, three games. You change three games, and that's all really required, which speaks miles on what he was able to do, not just to Liverpool, but to the Premier League, really created the ability to make it more than just a one-horse race with Man City for the majority of the time. So, but it's very interesting. It's going to be exciting to see this new transition to a new manager, see what fits in. I'm really interested to see what he does with that double pivot, because right now you look at who you've been able to use as your number six, and it's been between Endo, when healthy, and McAllister, who you didn't bring in to be a six. So now kind of bringing back to that double pivot, maybe you you go in the summer, you look for someone who's more of a natural number six to go there with Endo. I know Endo was kind of a band-aid on that position over this year. That worked out relatively well. But it will be very, very interesting to see what he's able to bring to Liverpool and see what type of transition this provides.
Absolutely. And the guy I think is probably the most interesting to see how he works with him is Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
Potentially we could see, because obviously McAllister did play a double pivot at Brighton. It could be that he puts Trent and McAllister next to each other. He also has experimented with inverting his fullbacks into midfield as well. And we know obviously Trent has some experience with that. So that will certainly be interesting. And just the one thing I wanted to touch on was Ruben Amorim was originally the favorite once Xabi Alonso stepped down just took his name out of the running and was going to continue on a Leverkusen. Apparently the reason why they opted for Slot over Amorim is the fact that Amorim was completely unwilling to change or deviate from his 3-4-3 setup, which would obviously require a lot of change within the Liverpool squad. But also from what I've read, it's that the whole academy plays like each level, the U21s, the U18s, the U16s, down to the U toddlers, they all play the same way at Liverpool. They'll play the same formation, play the same style of play. That would have had to change. And I think Slot, there's a lot more similarities in the principles that he plays with. So I think that's a big reason why Liverpool opted to go for Arne Slot as opposed to Ruben Amorim, just to address that, because I know I've talked about it with a couple of our listeners.
I mean, that's a great point.
Another big thing that I mean I see from this is the 4-2-3-1. You can build around Salah up top now. You can actually slot Nunez over, something like that, where you can have that focal point where he's going to get a lot more opportunities, because that is your, I mean, not your, he might be the best striker in the Premier League right now. So
yeah,
like that's going to be very big. I think
he could also, I mean, I don't know. I've never seen him play there, but it's possible that he plays in that 10 role too. We've obviously seen his, you know, game from a playmaking standpoint grow leaps and bounds. So, and obviously he's not going to get faster. So obviously the wingers are a big thing. I think even with the options that Liverpool had, that's one area where I would be surprised if they didn't bring in a winger. He really, really likes to rotate from what I've read. He emphasizes that to his sporting director or recruitment staff, whoever you want to say, is that he really needs, you know, multiple options of different wingers with different skill sets. And I think there's a little bit too much duplicativeness, you know, between how Gakpo, Nunez, Salah, and Jota play. I think, you know, one other guy a little bit more in that mold of Diaz, but potentially with, you know, a little bit more better finishing or more clinical would go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be exciting, like I said. And Kyle did his hand count for the syllables, I believe, and the duplicativeness that you dropped there. And that was, I mean, that was a word and a half.
Oh, yeah. You saw that? Yeah. I mean, hell of a word to drop on us at almost 8 p.m. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I didn't want to repeat it. I thought I was going to fuck it up. And I'm not going to say it again because I think I said it right the first time. But that was very impressive. Very impressive. But yeah, I mean, final thoughts, Sean. Are you thinking like – final
yeah, one to, 10.
To one to one 10 to 10 on this. I mean, we talked about it last week. The manager market is poor right now.
It's thin. It's very super thin.
And we'll talk about it in 2 seconds for 2 minutes. Xabi Alonso, Xavi decided to stay at Barcelona. Xabi Alonso obviously is now staying with Leverkusen, who's probably going to use it as a transitional year to fill an Ancelotti slot in 2 years when he retires from Real Madrid. So that was kind of
how could you leave Leverkusen right now? He's a legend there forever now. You got to stay another season.
Yeah. So 1 to 10, rate the acquisition.
I'll give it like an 8. I'm happy about it. I think the only guy that I would have given a 10 was Xabi Alonso. I said that when Klopp stepped down. But yeah, it's an 8, 8.5, and we'll see. Obviously, you can't judge anybody until you actually see them in the job, right? So we'll see.
Do you imagine that? Imagine Xabi Alonso just shows up at Bayer Leverkusen, wins the season, goes undefeated, doesn't lose a game, and then just leaves. Like, chilling.
I mean, you trade your stocks when they're high, right? So you don't want to necessarily lose that opportunity. I mean, he could bust next year.
Like, while the streak is active, he's just out. Nah, I'm done.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, they had another 96-minute goal to save their unbeaten streak this weekend, too. The team just won't stop. It's unbelievable. Every week we talk about it. But to wrap up the hot news real quick, we kind of alluded to it very slightly, but Xavi opts to stay at Barcelona. I think it's because of his good run as of late since his quote-unquote stepping down. They were undefeated until, ironically, he said he was going to stay, and then the next game was against Real Madrid, which they ended up losing. So that kind of, he could have just announced it at the end of the season, and maybe they would have kept winning. But that was also after they lost in the Champions League. So that was their first loss in that La Liga run. But he decides to stay, so excited to see him. Again, thins that manager pool a little bit more. So maybe we'll see other managers. I'm referencing Erik ten Hag. Maybe he'll stay again because that manager pool is very thin. But heading into the weekend roundup, we did have a lot of interesting, exciting games. But one of the ones that shocked me the most, and it really probably shouldn't based off what I'll say at the end of it, was Bournemouth, the Cherries, beating the Gulls at Brighton at Vitality Stadium, which is Bournemouth's hometown, home stadium, 3-0 with an XG of 2.11 to 0.94. Sean, take us through the Cherries and the Gulls game.
Absolutely. So it's a battle on the South Coast. And first of all, I wanted to give a shout out to my future brother-in-law, Brad, and my close personal friends, Addy and Bo, the biggest Cherry fans that I know. But yeah, it's another great result for Bournemouth. Enes Ünal, a loan signing that they signed right at the end of the winter window on loan, had a great game. Dominated Brighton aerially.
Just 1 second. I'm sorry. That has got to be one of the roughest names that we've ever had to say on this podcast.
He's Turkish, dude. I didn't mess it up. It's like Enes Kanter. That's his name. It is what it is.
But even the wasn't Ünal, good at soccer.
Imagine no, high school.
It's the Ünal part that really throws me through a loop too. Like it sounds like you just noted one of the worst vital organs and then the second worst vital organ.
So this man's name is Enes and you're focusing on Ünal.
Well, I mean, okay. Yeah.
He's very good in the air because he sets up Marco Senesi's opener off a corner with his head. And then on top of that, he scores a second goal in the game with his noggin, his first Premier League start. By the way, while we're on the subject of this guy, has anyone seen him and Edison Cavani in the same room? It looks like the exact same person. I swear. He's got the hair, everything.
Yeah.
Everything. It looks just like him. But yeah, a wonderful performance for Bournemouth. But they, I mean, Brighton seemed to play a little bit better once Enciso came on in the 66th minute. They had created a couple chances. He almost scored an absolute worldie from outside the box, little curler that just ended up outside the post. But they didn't take their chances on the day. And Justin Kluivert, who we've talked about a couple of times, puts the game out of reach, his 7th goal of the season, almost a carbon copy of the goal that Leroy Sané scored today in the Champions League. Cutting in off the right side, hitting with his left, beating the goalkeeper near post. But just a couple of notes on Bournemouth. Unbeaten in their last 6 home matches, they already have the best points total in the top flight in the club's history. They are not actually in the best position to finish because they did finish 9th 1 year under Eddie Howe back in, I think, 1819 or 1920. But they only had 46 points that season. And then the other thing that really shocked me, and James, I know you and I talked about this, since November 5th, Bournemouth are 5th in the table with 42 points in 25 matches. Only Arsenal, City, Liverpool, and Villa are better in that time frame.
Yeah.
And that's really impressive to me. It really just goes to show that they needed a little bit of time to adjust to Adoni Iraola's system. But since they've got up and running, they've been fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, that lost 9-0.
Had to bring it up.
Yep.
Always.
I was going to say, we gave a good shout out to the biggest Cherry fans in the world. I still think we have to dub Kyle as the least Cherry fan out there.
The fraudulent. But, yep.
100%. They have been going through some really, really hot streaks. We talked about him a lot. We've talked about Solanke, you know, who's been a phenomenal character in this act that Bournemouth is doing right now. And just those four names, Arsenal, City, Liverpool, Villa, have been the hottest teams all season. So to throw yourself up there with them is extremely, extremely impressive. I know we shouted out specifically in our preseason highlights that Iriola was coming in, had a similar system, and was going to really take these guys to the next level. So I think it was a great shout out that we had at the beginning of the season, and I'm looking forward to see what they do at the end. We still have Arsenal to play against for the Bournemouth, so I hope it kind of pitters out there. But on the opposite side of the coin, unfortunately, Bournemouth's doing really well. The Gulls have not, right? So they went from one of our most favorite teams to watch to our probably the disappointment of the season. Injuries have obviously played a large part in that. They've had a cumulative 1,402 days lost as of April 22nd, which is the sixth most in the English Premier League. But even before that, we kind of stated that they would probably finish lower than Villa because of their progress in the trading market. I call it the great goal migration when they sell everyone off and whatnot. But, you know, only Sheffield United have had worse results from their last five matches in form right now. Brighton currently are in 19th place in form, which is outrageous. They've collected 2 points from five games and have had 4 wins in their last 15 all competitions. Definitely not the De Zerbi that we knew. I think he was getting excited to possibly be relocated to a new team. And Brighton said, no, we're not losing you. You're sticking right here because no one's going to want you. But still, very, very hard kind of fixtures coming up. They have Villa, Newcastle, Chelsea, and Manchester United left. You know, real quick, because we're kind of going quickly here, but give a yes or no for both of you. Kyle, I'll start with you, yes or no. But if you're a Gulls fan, are you concerned for next year? Despite, I know you're going to have this large bankroll, right? You made a reported a profit 2023 season of 122.8 million pounds, and that's after taxes, not including the Casado sale. Are you concerned for next year?
Yes. I mean, I'll talk a second on it if you want me to. It depends what their goals are. If they're trying to qualify for the Champions League, then yes, I think yes. If they're trying to come into the top 10, no, I don't think that they should have anything to be concerned about. You can't do the business that you're doing at Brighton and making all these young players, making them phenomenal and shipping them off for a profit and expect to do well. Eventually, you're going to get a round of players that you're not able to make great and sell off. And that's what they're stuck with. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to bite you in the ass eventually. So I think they should be okay to stay in the top 10 next year, but to think that they're qualifying for any of the tournaments is, in my opinion, a far cry.
Yeah. Sean?
I actually wouldn't be that concerned because they're not going to have to contend with Europe next year. Unless barring some disastrous results from the teams ahead of them. And I think that as long as they make a couple of additions in the center of the midfield, they should do okay. I think that's really where it, you know, hurt them this year. Pascal Gross was good, but they didn't really have someone to partner him. And I think that's the main part. They have Carlos Baleba, who they brought in, but replacing Casado and McAllister, who are both really top-class midfielders, that's really the struggle. And I think the injury problems will be significantly lessened by not having to contend with Europa League like they did this year.
Yeah, no, all great points, lads. Very good points. And we'll kind of quickly segue into St. Tottenham's Day, which was the North London Derby. Arsenal 3, Tottenham 2 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. This is the second win in a row at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for the Gunners. Last year, they won 2-0. So this was interesting because this had the largest expected goals against for Arsenal the entire season in one match. And Tottenham had 1.11 at halftime. So it wasn't just a second half surge. It was spread very well. And if you actually watch this game, Tottenham, I would argue, probably had the better part of it for maybe the first 20-25 minutes until we started to score. And then obviously there was some key moments that swung momentum. But, you know, having an total XG of 2.73 for Tottenham to Arsenal's 1.28 is not something that we're typically used to. And we kind of said it in the brief intro, but set pieces dominated once again for Arsenal. And they added another two, number 18 and 19, in this game, the first one coming from Saka, who caused a very difficult corner kick coming from the right side of the pitch, curled right in and ended at the back end of the net off of a Højbjerg's own goal, which is their fifth North London Derby own goal for Spurs. And there's only been five in North London Derbies, and all of them have been from Tottenham. the last three have been a result of a play directly related to Saka. So not a great piece of info if you're a Spurs fan. Great piece of info for me. But it's tough. You know, I think that the team with the next amount of set pieces in the season is 16, and that's Everton. So, and that's from when they started tracking the stat back in 2017, 2018, which was a great addition. This was a major, or is a major, area of concern for Tottenham, because they've allowed 24% of their goals on set plays. Only Sheffield United, Forest, and Manchester United, I don't know how you fit in there, but you obviously do, have allowed more set piece goals. So, you know, it's something obviously I think Ange Postecoglou is going to have to focus on. I think it's, again, a great addition to Arsenal's roster, or their artillery, to have these set pieces in the bag. But that's how the first goal happens. And obviously the second goal was on one of the crazier moments of the game. It comes directly from a in our own box transition turnover from Tottenham Hotspurs, which had not one but two shouts for a penalty kick. The first one was Leandro Trossard, got cut across from Kulusevski. It was a very slight touch. I still watch the replays, and I definitely do not think there's enough contact there to warrant a penalty kick. And I know that's a lot of what I've been hearing on a lot of other podcasts and reviews. So I think, you know, Michael Oliver gets the on-field decision correct. And then Declan Rice puts in a tackle at the top of the box on Madison, gets the ball. Madison goes over, and we quickly transition up the pitch. We get the ball to
Havertz.
Thank you very much. Holds the ball up very nicely, turns, and with his right side foot puts in a gorgeous about 40-yard dime to Saka, who has a fantastic first touch. And that's about all we need to do, because then Ben Davies did the rest and allowed Saka to cut into his left foot going on from the right side. And I just don't know how you do it. And I'll read it verbatim, because this is fantastic. It says, let's see where you said it is. Oh, you got rid of it. Did you get rid of it? It said even a blind man.
No, here it is. I said, you knew, I knew, and the blind man who lives on the London Underground knew that Bukayo Saka was cutting it back onto his left foot, but somehow Ben Davies did not, and he overruns it, overplaying his right foot that he doesn't have to allow him to cut in and curl it on his left. I mean, it's insanity.
Yep. It was a great finish, a great setup play. This is Kai Havertz now transitioning as well. He's been able to do it all. This is his fourth game of the season where he's provided a goal and an assist in the same match. So I think Kai Havertz needs some new haters, because the old ones are now currently his fans, and he is absolutely dominating the performance. That made it 2-0. Kai Havertz then makes it 3-0 on another set piece goal. A beautiful corner kick taken from Declan Rice that the 6'3", 6'4", he might be even taller than that, Havertz, I think he's like 6'5", puts it in with his head. I mean, absolutely picture perfect. Someone will have to check me on that. I think it's 6'3". But,
I think he's 6'3".
Yeah, I think he's 6'3". But, he's towersome. So that puts us up to 3-0, which at that point, I'm watching this poolside, and I think we're going to cruise to victory. But, of course, there's always some more drama in North London Derby. And David Raya had – he's 6'4"? Very good. Very good. David Raya puts up one of his – major errors of the season, which it looks like he gets caught in between deciding to make two passes, whether he goes further down the pitch or he tries to dink it over for a quicker ball and just essentially passes it right to Romero, who slots it perfectly in the left side of the goal. Makes it 3-1, puts a lot of life back into the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And from there, kind of went a little bit downhill for Arsenal. Possession-wise, Tottenham started to dominate more, create more chances. Arsenal really didn't have another opportunity in the second half, other than Saka had an opportunity in the first portion of the second half to put away a second goal for him. But towards the end of the game, it got a lot of, tipsy Tarvey there with Declan Rice. He does another tackle in the box, this one more clumsy. It wasn't really a tackle. He goes to clear the ball, but Ben Davies, trying to make up for his error before, cuts across Declan Rice. And this is where the nuts busted. Declan Rice gives it to Ben Davies' cherries really quickly and concedes a penalty that I don't know whose goal was hit harder. Was it Son's PK or was it Sané's goal today in the Champions League? Because this thing was smashed. He absolutely blew it past David Raya, who does go the right way. But before he even is able to get a foot off of his center line, it's in the back of the net. A great goal by Son, who we haven't heard from in a little while. But from there, we played some solid defense and locked it down to secure 3 points and remain in title top contention, 1 point behind City. But of course, they have a game in hand. So that's kind of the North London Derby in a nutshell. But Sean, what do you have for this one?
I just wanted to mention it because you talked about, obviously, you know, how big Arsenal set pieces have been. and you look at it, yeah, Havertz is 6'4", and you look down, they have Saliba's at 6'3", they have Gabriel is at 6'2" or 6'3". You know, Tomiyasu, Declan Rice, Ben White, Thomas Partey, all those guys played in this game. They're all really big guys, and it makes it difficult for teams to cope. A lot of teams don't have, you know, that level of height to compete. Vicario's not a super tall goalkeeper, and I think that that played a part. And this is also something like set piece defense is something that even dating back to Celtic was an issue for Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah. I thank you for bringing that, because it was one of the big highlights I saw over the weekend, and one of the main reasons why Thomas Partey came in to this match to really secure more defensively and build a little bit more of a wall there. And the last thing I'll say, because after David Raya's huge error, he did have a lot more presence in crosses. So a lot of people will say, what has he provided to the table? He's not that great of a shot stopper. He hasn't faced a lot of shot stopping. He's going to probably win the Golden Glove, which really should be distributed between the entire defensive line, because he hasn't really had much to do because of that defensive line. But you look at one stat for David Raya that I hold on to pretty dearly, is that he was brought in for two specific jobs, I'll say. His possession with the ball, which unfortunately was an error this game and caused the goal. But his second one is his cross-stopping ability, his domination in the air to be able to see an early cross, get off his line and grab it. And he leads, I think it's top five European leagues with crosses stopped. He is number one in the EPL. I have to check the Europe's top five. But a little tidbit for David Raya, there's the good and the bad. But with that being said, why don't we pop into the rapid kicks? And Sean, why don't you kick it off with Newcastle?
Yep, Newcastle 5, Sheffield United 1. The Blades relegation is confirmed. So we have our first relegated team, and it'll be the first confirmed one for a while, because Burnley, once again, obviously took points away, and we'll get into that. But a dominant win for Newcastle at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, what do we have next, my friend?
We got the big guns, Man City, coming at you. They won 2-0, classic. Haaland scored. It was a fun game. Next.
The next one that we do have is Everton 1, Brentford 0 at Goodison Park. It has been an absolutely insane streak and week for Goodison Park, as the Toffees dominated their inner city rivals 2-0 earlier and dispatched the Bees to confirm their place in next year's Premier League. So if you're a Toffee fan, you're at the top of the world, because you are staying up again. Only Man City have received more points, 15, than Everton and Arsenal, 12 points in their last 5 matches. So you look at the table in form.
Let's go! Come on, City.
It goes Man City, Arsenal, Everton, with and 4 of Everton's last 5 matches have been shutouts. So the Terrific Toffees are doing it again.
Moving across Merseyside to the team that Everton thrashed, Liverpool officially bows out of the title race thanks to Mikel Antonio's late header that tied the match between West Ham and Liverpool at the London Stadium. The point does, however, book their place in next year's Champions League, as they cannot be caught by Tottenham, and 1 point in their next 3 matches against Tottenham, Villa, or Wolves will confirm them in third place.
And they still have that match against Spurs, so they'll even separate a little bit more. And then finally, Kyle.
Yeah, we had Burnley and Manchester United squaring off at Old Trafford. The Clarets pick up a point with the 7th time in their last 8 games. They're doing great, guys. We love to see Burnley thriving. We love to see Vincent Kompany thriving. And we love to see your boy, Zeki Amdouni, scoring the penalty. Onana, dumbass, punched a man in the face. Forgot that you're not allowed to do that. But the big news from this game is that Anthony scores his first goal of the season, and then very rightfully so holds up his pointer finger to the camera saying one, because he got one, and then goes ahead in the interview and goes, I actually am happy with my performance this season, with a whopping goal and an assist. So he's doing great. You know, big things coming out of Camp Anthony right now.
That is true. Onana has punched one more person in the face this season than Antony's goals. So at least this one was penalized. If you can't remember the first one, it was the first goal, first match of the season against the Wolves. But with that being said, we're going to take a 5-second break here, pop on some tunes, and we'll get back to you with the weekend look ahead and the lock of the week.
So So as we enter match week 36, we have some really exciting fixtures to look at. The first one on the docket, Sheffield United versus Forest at Bramall Lane. We talked about, obviously, that Sheffield United are confirmed to go down. However, Forest are still alive, and this is a huge opportunity for them. If they win this game, it would put them four points clear of Luton Town and 5 points clear of Burnley, which with this little time left would almost guarantee their place in next year's Premier League. But at this point, Sheffield United's just playing for pride. When you have nothing to lose, though, sometimes those are the most dangerous opposition. So good one to watch. And obviously Forest have played well, but just haven't gotten the results. We'll see if that holds true again this weekend.
All right, we'll move right into the City Wolves at the Etihad. City looks to enact their revenge. It's a big game. This is one of the three teams that have beaten Man City this year, along with Arsenal and Aston Villa. There's a little bit of respect and disrespect going on the betting apps right now. Man City is minus 1,100 to win that game. I mean, Wolves, there is 19-1 odds against the Wolves, plus 1,900. That is just straight disrespectful, in my opinion. This is the Premier League, the best league in the world. Any team can beat any team on any given day. So I'm not going to tell you to bet against Man City, because Man City is the greatest team in history ever, no matter what. But this might be a fun upset.
Yeah, I mean, it happened earlier in the season. Like we said, the reverse fixture, Wolves did win in a crazy fashion. So I'm hoping that we have some Wolverhampton Wanderers fans out there. On the other side of the coin here, we have Chelsea versus West Ham, another London derby here. It's at Stamford Bridge, and just 1 point separates these teams at the moment, and a loss for Chelsea would most certainly eliminate either team from contention for the final European spot. Now, Chelsea do have a game on Thursday against Spurs, so they'll be hoping to come back from a walloping 5-0 loss against Arsenal. 2 weeks or two games ago. So hopefully they have some type of backbone in that. And Sean?
Yes, speaking of Tottenham Hotspur, they traveled to Anfield this weekend to take on Liverpool. Bit of a revenge game just based on the malarkey that occurred all the way back in September when I had one of the more famous rants on this podcast and my blood pressure reached dangerous heights. But there's no margin for error for Tottenham now at this point, especially after that loss to Arsenal. They also have a visit from Man City looming. So if they want to catch Aston Villa for that final spot in the Champions League, they have to win this game.
Yeah, it's a must win or go home. And I think everyone in the Premier League is hoping that at least get into some form of form so that they can go up against Man City with a little bit more vigor.
Everyone, just you?
Yeah, I don't know. I think everyone, except for Kyle.
Yeah. It's. I mean, everyone hates Man City. I don't know what everyone's talking about anymore. But Kyle, why don't you say something that everyone loves, and it is complete bangers. We have a goal of the week for the ages here, and it happened in the Crystal Palace.
Hell yeah, we do. Jeffrey Schlupp to equalize against Fulham. That was an absolute piss missile off of his left foot. What a strike. James, you touched upon the placement of this strike a little bit. You want to touch on that?
Yeah, I don't think you could have physically put it there with your hand any better of a strike than this came. It was an absolute piss missile. Again, three piss missiles this weekend. You had Son's piss missile from the PK. You had Leroy Sané's goal today, and you have Jeffrey Schlupp. This thing hit off, I believe, the crossbar and the left post first somehow. And if this thing wasn't stopped by the net, someone in that stadium was going to the ER by getting on the wrong end of that thing. That was so hard launched into that stands that I'm pretty sure the refs had to check the net to make sure it didn't rip after it. But really, hats off, Jeffrey Schlupp. Crystal Palace has been in tremendous form as of late. They were on a very bad kind of losing goalless streak, and they've put in a few in the past few matches, and a lot of them have come from the hand of Schlupp, Eze, Mateta. Very, very promising kind of transition for them now. One thing that's never as promising, what we try to be, or at least Kyle does the best of it, and it's the lock of the week. Sean has respectively bow out from the lock of the week for the, I believe, for now, at least. Maybe we can get him, give one more by the end of the season. But sitting at 2-7 and then myself sitting at 3-6-1, I understand that completely. And I don't know why I would want to poison any of your ears. But in, again, I'll say it again because I just love saying it. In honor of St. Tottenham's Day, my lock of the week is actually Tottenham Hotspurs.
Guys, it's a real thing, by the way. St. Tottenham's Day is a real thing. It's been fact-checked. It's preposterous, but it's real. He didn't just blow smoke out his ass for this one.
Oh, no. I can't take credit for that. But I am picking Tottenham over Chelsea on Thursday's match. I just think Tottenham played a lot better than most people would like to admit from the Arsenal fan base against Arsenal this weekend. They looked good. They looked sharp. It was one of those games that, if there weren't those set pieces, it could have easily gone the other way. So I think Spurs sitting in fifth place, needing the points, going against a Chelsea team that came from a battering at Arsenal and then a tough tie. They thought they had the win against Villa over the weekend. I think Chelsea's just not in it. They're in the middle of no man's land. I don't think they're really pushing for anything. I don't think they'll get anything. So this is a big one for Spurs, and I think they're going to live up to
that. No, I like that pick. I mean, think about the last week each team had. Both teams were down 3-0 to Arsenal at one point in the last week. Tottenham manned up. They stayed strong mentally, and they tried to come back and get that very needed point. Chelsea keeled over. They were crushed mentally. So, I mean, two very different teams right there right now.
Great point.
Yep. And it's away at Stamford Bridge. It's plus money right now. I think it's like plus 195 are the odds for Spurs right now. And, you know, as much as I don't like putting money on Spurs, I'm happy either way, because if they win, then I win money. If they lose, I'm happy because they lost. So it's a win-win. I would definitely double down on it. And that's how hopefully I get another lock of the week correct. Well, gentlemen, does anyone have anything else to add to this fantastic podcast? A lot of laughter in this one. I don't want to say it's due to most of the paraphernalia we've been talking about, but it's pretty good. So without further ado, everyone enjoy the remainder of the week. It's going to be an exciting weekend. Don't forget to tune into the Champions League game tomorrow, which is PSG versus Dortmund. We did have a game today, which ended 2-2 Bayern Madrid. So that is this week. Don't forget to tune in, and we'll talk about it next week. So enjoy your weekend, everyone.